It was 5 days before I got my sea legs, and by then I was heartily sick of the hellish continual din of the Balliol College, the incessant creaking and groaning of timber and cordage like a fiend's orchestra playing the same discordant notes, regular as clockwork, each time she rolled. And by God, she rolled! Oh, it was the life for a roaring boy, all right, and that was only the start of it. One morning, when I was sufficiently recovered to hold down the gruel that Looney brought me, and strong enough to kick his backside into the bargain, comes Captain Spring to tell me I'd lain long enough.
"You'll stand your watch like everyone else," says he, "and you can start on the work you're paid for, which is to go through every scrap of cargo and see that those longshore thieves haven't bilked me."
I followed him out on deck. We were scudding along like a flying duck with great billows of canvas spread and a wind on the quarter-deck fit to lift your hair off. There was plenty of shipping in sight, but no land, and I didn't have time to stop and stare, with Spring barking at me. He led me down the poop ladder and then dropped through a scuttle by the mizzenmast.
"There you are," says he. "Take a good look."
We were in what seemed to be an enormous room, stretching away forward to the foremast, where there was a bulkhead. This room ran the full breadth of the ship and was well lighted by gratings in the deck about 15 feet above our heads, but it was unlike the interior of any ship I'd ever seen. On either side, about 4 feet above the deck on which we stood, there was a kind of half-deck, perhaps 7 feet deep, like a gigantic shelf, and above that yet another shelf of the same size. The space down the centre of the deck between the shelves was piled high with cargo in a great mound. It must have been a good 70 feet long by 12 high.
"I'll send my clerk to you with the manifest," says Spring, "and a couple of hands to help shift and stow."
"Is this the hold?" says I. "It's an odd-looking place for cargo."
"Aye," says he. "Ain't it, though?"
Something in his voice, and in the dank feel of that great, half-empty deck, set the worms stirring inside me. It was all clean and holly-stoned, but there was a strange, heavy smell about it that I couldn't place. Looking about, I noticed something in the shadows at the back of the lower shelf. I reached in and drew out a long length of light chain, garnished here and there with large bracelets. I dropped them with a clatter as the truth rushed in on me. Now I saw why the Balliol College had sailed from France, why her deck was this strange shape.
"My God," cries I, "you're a slaver." "Good for you, Mr. Flashman," says Spring. "And what then?"
"What then?" says I.
"Well, you can let me ashore, by God. If I'd guessed what you were, I'd have seen you dead and old Morrison with you before I set foot on your lousy packet."
"Dear me," says he softly. "You're not an abolitionist, surely?"
"Damn abolition, and you too," cries I. "They stretch your neck for slaving. You tricked me into this, you and that old swine. But I won't have it, do you hear? You'll set me ashore and..."
I was striding past him toward the ladder, and suddenly he shot out a hand and with surprising strength swung me round. The pale eyes glazed into mine, and then his fist drove into my belly, doubling me up with pain. I reeled back, and he came after me, smashing me left and right to the head and sending me sprawling against the cargo.
"Damn you!"
I shouted, and tried to crawl away, but he pinned me with his foot, glaring down at me.
"Now see here, Mr. Flashman. While you're on this ship, you're mine, do you see? You're not going ashore until this voyage is finished. Middle Passage, Indies, homeward run and all."
He stirred me with his foot.
"Now get up. You'll do your duty. I won't tell you twice."
And those terrible pale eyes looked into mine again.
"Do you understand me?"
"I understand you," I muttered.
"Sir," says he.
"Sir, it's a capital crime," I whimpered, my mind in real terror at the consequences.
"Don't be a fool," says he. "We're too fast and handy for any damned patrol ship, English or American. We don't get caught, Mr. Flashman, so you won't either. Does that set your mind at rest?"
It didn't, of course, but I knew better than to protest again.
"Well enough," growls he. "You'll begin on this lot," and he jerked a thumb at the cargo. "And for Christ's sake, Liven up, man. I'll not have you glooming up this ship with a long face. Just see.
At 8 bells, you'll leave off and come to my cabin. Mrs. Spring will be serving tea for the officers, and will wish to meet you.